This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Tallying up the damage. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay on this Friday, October 12th, and here's what we have for you this hour.
After Michael's rampage in the Florida panhandle, in some areas, there's nothing left.
U.S.-Saudi relations hit a snag over a Washington Post journalist disappearance.
Kanye West delivers a jaw-dropping show in the Oval Office.
Most of us get paid every 2 weeks. Could that pay cycle be changing?
The issue is with so many Americans living paycheck to paycheck, you know, you might have an unexpected bill, you might have something else come up before your paycheck comes in, and you don't have the money right away, even though you might have already earned it.
Maria Lamagna of MarketWatch has more on on-demand payment companies in about 20 minutes. Tropical Storm Michael is speeding off toward the Atlantic Ocean, but there will be nothing quick about Florida's recovery, where rows of homes have been smashed to pieces. The storm has already brought flash flooding to hurricane-weary parts of North and South Carolina and Virginia. Some of the worst damage occurred in Mexico Beach, Florida, where the hurricane crashed ashore Wednesday as a Category 4 monster with 155-mile-per-hour winds and a storm surge of 9 feet. Florida Governor Rick Scott took an aerial tour yesterday of parts of the panhandle.
We have over 1,000 people doing search and rescue. We have, I think it's 1,800 people that have offered and to be deployed of law enforcement.
Angela Lee manages a group home in Panama City. She says residents are now living in an emergency shelter.
I have no idea if it's still standing, if it's fine, but just no electricity. I don't know if the streets are flooded. Because of no cell service, I can't contact our maintenance supervisor, who would do the safety inspection to make sure we could return.
Michael was one of the most powerful hurricanes ever to make landfall on the U.S. mainland, and it's been blamed for at least 6 deaths. Hundreds of thousands of homes and businesses in the southeast are without power this morning. A gloomy October on Wall Street turned darker yesterday as heavy selling overseas and failed intraday rallies in the U.S. sent major stock indexes to another huge retreat. The Dow Industrials tumbled 546 points, leaving the blue chip index down 5.2% after 2 days of volatile trading. In a sign of rising anxiety, the volatility index soared to its highest level since February. Bankrate.com chief financial analyst Greg McBride says rising interest rates, lofty share valuations, and concerns about U.S. trade tensions with China and other major nations have weighed on trading throughout the year.
Now that the economy is doing better, interest rates are rising, and the bond market kind of got that memo last week, and the stock market got that memo this week, and as a result, investors are predictably throwing a little bit of a temper tantrum.
While the Dow remains just 6.6% below its October 3rd record, yesterday's action disappointed investors who had hoped the carnage could be contained to just one day. President Trump typically isn't one to be upstaged, but that wasn't the case yesterday when rapper Kanye West launched into a monologue across from him in the Oval Office, leaving even the president nearly speechless. West was invited to the White House to have lunch with Trump, a former NFL star, Jim Brown, and advisor Jared Kushner to discuss manufacturing, prison reform, and gang violence. But West, launching into a more than 10-minute profanity-infused soliloquy, talked about being mistakenly diagnosed as bipolar, about his family situation, and about his support for Trump, among other things.
You got to remove all that trapdoor out of the relationship. The four gentlemen that wrote the 13th Amendment, and I think the way the universe works, it's perfect. We don't have 13 floors, do we? You know, so the four gentlemen that wrote the 13th Amendment didn't look like the people they were amending.
West told Trump that his red Make America Great Again cap gave him power. He also plugged his ties to Adidas, saying the president had given him the heart to partner up with the sneaker maker. It's 11 minutes after the hour. Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. Thanks for joining us this morning. Well, mortgage rates continue to rise, and that's likely not good news for the housing market. Joining us to talk about interest rates and housing is Laura Casisto of the Wall Street Journal. Laura, where do we stand in terms of the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage?
We're at 4.9% for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage, and certainly what we're hearing on the ground talking to lenders and real estate agents is at this point, if you want to get below 5%, you better have pristine credit and 20% down. Increasingly, 5% rates are becoming the norm.
A year ago at this time, the average rate for a 30-year fixed was just about 3.9%. Now 4.9%. That's a full percentage point higher. That's a bigger difference for buyers in terms of a monthly mortgage payment, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. You're talking about, you know, $150 for a typical, you know, $250,000 home. But in a lot of places, New York, California, you're talking about an even bigger difference. And it's even bigger, more of a blow to the housing market there.
Years ago, we saw rates like 18%. That makes 5% sound low, but that's not the case for young first-time buyers today, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think even I'm a little bit younger, and even though I cover this all the time and I know that rates used to be 18%, it's hard for you to imagine an environment like that. I think most people have grown up, certainly as adults, seeing rates in the 3 to 4% range. And so even though 5% is actually historically pretty normal, it's going to feel like, I think, a shift for people.
Now, the Mortgage Bankers Association says there's a pain threshold around 6%. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly what I've heard, that the 6% is the point where we are likely to see the housing market really meaningfully slow down, and I don't think we're going to get there all that soon. With that said, though, I think that we are observing that the market is a lot more interest rate sensitive than it has been in the past, and I think one of the reasons is what we just touched on, that we have younger people who don't remember rates being this high, and I think the second is because we saw a huge run up in prices when rates were low. And so I think buyers are already more strained than they often have been in the past.
We're speaking with Laura Casisto from the Wall Street Journal. Laura, are the higher rates a negative for the refinancing picture?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know who is refinancing their home at this point. The average homeowner has a rate of, I want to say it's about 3.75%, something like that, maybe around 3.9. But anyway, a full percentage point at least below where rates are now. There's the odd person out there. Maybe they just had to get their credit score up or something like that, but there's almost nobody anymore who has a strong incentive to refinance.
What about home sellers? Are they being asked to reduce their asking price?
So we're certainly seeing that anecdotally. Overall, on an annual, if you look at compared to last year, prices are still growing, but price growth is slowing. And I am definitely hearing, especially in some of these more expensive markets, but I would say some of these hotter markets generally, Seattle, Dallas, Denver, New York, we're hearing more and more about price reductions.
So what does this mean for the home buying outlook going forward?
I think it means if you bought a home, good for you. But I think if you're still looking to buy, I think it's a challenging time, especially, I mean, we saw this is the biggest jump we've seen in rates in 2 years, and prices aren't going to reflect that right away. Prices are still high. But I do think for buyers that just got exhausted of bidding wars and cash buyers and the real frenzy that we've had in the market, that has really cooled. And so I think for buyers who want a little bit more of a leisurely market and they can sit down and figure out what monthly payment makes sense for them and maybe adjust their prices downward a bit, I think it can be a good time to buy.
Thanks, Laura. Laura Casisto of the Wall Street Journal. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Jen, damage assessments continue in the wake of Michael's slog across the Carolinas and Virginia. Nearly 145,000 Virginians are without power this morning. In North Carolina's mountains, motorists had to be rescued from cars trapped by high water as the storm pushed through areas still recovering from the dunking delivered by Storm Florence last month. Florida Governor Rick Scott is urging caution in the cleanup in his state.
If you're going to use generators, know how it works. If you're going to use chainsaws, be really careful. Just, you know, look, survive the storm. Don't get hurt afterwards.
Two hospitals in Panama City, Florida, are evacuating all of their roughly 330 patients due to structural damage from Hurricane Michael. Their emergency rooms will stay open. Patients are being transferred to Pensacola and Jacksonville in Florida, as well as Mobile, Alabama. The Dow Jones Industrial Average took its two-day decline past 1,300 points, tumbling 545 points yesterday. The S&P 500 also pulled lower, and the NASDAQ Composite Index slid into what traders call correction territory, a market that's fallen more than 10% from a recent peak. Bankrate.com chief financial analyst Greg McRide isn't too worried.
Hold on. Go read a book, take a walk, go work out, do something, but don't obsess about, what is in all likelihood a pretty run-of-the-mill normal market pullback.
A murder charge has been reduced against a white Philadelphia police officer who shot and killed a black man after a confrontation over a dirt bike last year, and bail's been set for former officer Ryan Pownall at $500,000. Police say Pownall confronted 30-year-old David Jones for riding the dirt bike on a city street, frisked him and felt a gun, and then after a scuffle, Jones fled and Pownall fatally shot him in the back. CDC is asking all physicians to report suspected cases of acute flaccid myelitis and send samples. The rare polio-like illness is increasingly being reported around the country. It's a rare condition affecting the nervous system, specifically the spinal cord. And in Los Angeles, officials are concerned about an uptick in typhus cases. They're dedicating more resources to cleaning streets and corralling stray animals. Typhus outbreaks often associated with poor hygiene and overcrowding. Lindsey Buckingham is suing his former bandmates in Fleetwood Mac after they fired him from a U.S. tour. The group replaced their former frontman in January without any warning, and he says that cost him up to $14 million as a result.
Is there any band anywhere that's had more drama than Fleetwood Mac?
Seriously.
There's always something going on. Relationships, divorces, and now lawsuits. Thanks, Rasa. It is 22 minutes after the hour. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal. Well, most of us get paid every 2 weeks, but for some, that creates financial hardship. MarketWatch's Maria Lamagna is here with information on some on-demand payment companies that let you decide when you're paid. Maria, how does this work?
It's kind of a common problem, We don't really get to decide typically how often we get paid. Our company decides that. But the issue is with so many Americans living paycheck to paycheck, you might have an unexpected bill. You might have something else come up before your paycheck comes in, and you don't have the money right away, even though you might have already earned it. So now we're seeing these smaller companies pop up that are actually helping companies do this, or even that you can sign up for individually that will actually give you an advance on your paycheck. But not as a loan, more as just, they might charge you a small fee to give it to you, but it's much, much less than it would be to get a payday loan or something like that.
What kinds of fees are we talking about?
So one of the companies is called Even. Their only client right now is Walmart, but they say they're going to be expanding. They charge a $6 monthly subscription fee, which compared to, the interest that you could pay on a payday loan is relatively small. I talked to another company called Daily Pay, and they said their fees are more similar to an ATM fee, and they max out at $3. So every time you get your paycheck in advance, you pay a $3 fee. Which, isn't inexpensive if you do it all the time, but it is much, much less than some of those interest rates end up being.
Maria, as I mentioned in the intro, most of us get paid every 2 weeks, some people once a week and some people monthly. But why has that generally been a two-week paycheck cycle?
The thing is, that's actually just a historical precedent, and really there's no technological reason for that. I think going into this story, I thought, there must be some tax reason or some payroll reason, but there really isn't. It's just that companies don't want to pay their employees too often because, what they have to, usually they outsource their payroll to another company, and sometimes that's their contract with that company depends on how many times they have to go through the payroll. So, if they're doing it all the time, they might get charged more. So it's really about, how your company can facilitate payroll. But technically, there's no reason why you couldn't get paid every single day.
We're speaking with MarketWatch's Maria Lamagna. Maria, how will the gig economy affect how we are paid?
So it already is, actually. Uber and Lyft are two companies that compete with each other very strongly for drivers. And so one thing that they've both added is the ability to get paid after every ride. They've worked with a company called Green Dot to do that and Square. And so now that those type of gig economy workers are used to doing that. That has kind of shifted into the, you know, non-gig economy regular payment cycles. You know, everyday workers are now saying, wait, I know someone that gets paid every day or every ride. Why can't this happen for me? So that conversation is already permeating, you know, a lot of different companies and is kind of increasing the pressure to pay workers more frequently.
Do you think the rise of the on-demand payment company will somehow force traditional companies to change the way they pay in their cycles?
Yeah, I think we're already seeing some of that. You know, obviously the demand will have to come from the workers, and it's kind of hard to lobby your company to pay you more frequently. I think that would unfortunately be hard to do, but I think now that this is part of the national conversation a bit more, companies may start to do this as a benefit for their workers. Some of these companies are, you know, that allow you to outsource this are presenting it as a benefit. They're saying, you know, if you want to keep your workers happy, if you want to retain them longer, pay them more often. So we may see it sort of positioned that way, and it could actually make an impact relatively soon.
Thanks, Maria. Maria LaMagna of MarketWatch. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
No one compliments you when their paycheck is correct, but make one mistake and you risk alienating your entire workforce. With Kronos, we make sure your payroll is done right the first time, from punch to paycheck. Embedded checklists, simplified workflows, a single source of truth. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system, all with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at kronos.com/payroll. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
On this Friday, October 12th, Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Ross Akay. Some of our top stories and headlines. Michael spreads flooding rain and wind into the Carolinas and up the East Coast. Trump's legal team has begun preparing answers to written questions posed by special counsel Robert Mueller's team. Dina Powell withdraws from UN ambassador consideration. Carson Wentz throws three touchdown passes as the Eagles rout the Giants 34-13 in Thursday night football. And the surprise visitors living in an attic discovered during Hurricane Michael. That story in about 20 minutes. It saves money and it retains teachers. Four-day school schedules are starting to spread across the country. Tonnell Hobbs of the Wall Street Journal joins us now to talk about this trend. Tonnell, how widespread is the four-day school week?
You know, it's really growing. You know, we actually reached out to every state, all 50 states in D.C., and I came back with at least 600 school districts are doing this in at least 22 states. And just a decade ago, that number was about 120 school districts. So it's really growing. It's getting more and more popular. And it's, you know, it's been really on the western side of the map, but now it's going east.
Why has it been mostly in the western part of the state so far?
You know, that's a really good question. And what from just talking to different educators, it looks like it's more of a geographical situation there, where you have, you know, more districts spread out, more rural districts, because this is something that started in rural districts and is still very dominant in rural districts. And there's just a lot more rural districts out west.
Tonnell, why did the rural districts decide to go to the four-day week?
It all goes to saving money. And when you're in a rural district and you're really spread out, you can spend a good chunk of your budget on transportation because everybody's really spread out. And so initially, it's always about saving money. And then they started noticing other benefits like, wow, you know, teachers are really attracted to having a three-day weekend. This might help with recruiting. In some of the rural areas, sometimes it's hard to recruit teachers out there.
I also saw one of the benefits in your story as fewer absences. That would be a huge one.
Yes, and that's another unexpected benefit that some of these districts initially going into it to save money are saying, wow, you know what? It really does help for the kids to get three-day weekends, and, you know, they're showing up. And the same thing with teachers. You know, they're noticing fewer teacher absences.
We're speaking with Tonnell Hobbs of the Wall Street Journal. Now, if you're shrinking the week to 4 days, do you add hours to the other days?
Yes, that's what they're doing. They're adding hours. And, you know, in some of these districts, they had already met the minimum required hours for instruction. So, you know, they might add anywhere from 15 minutes a day to 90 minutes a day. It just depends on where they were at when they started, when they were on 5 days. If they were already exceeding the hours, there is just basically adding time at the end of that day.
Now, does each state decide its own hours and or days? I know here in New Jersey, kids have to be in school a certain number of days, not hours.
Yes, and exactly. And that, and it's easier for states, and you're right, each state does decide, you know, how many hours kids are going to be in school. And I noticed that the states that have the 4 days are those states that basically look at hours. They don't care, you know, how many days you're in school. They just want you, you know, to be in school for the year for 1,080 hours or whatever. And there are some states that still do base it on how many days you're in school. And those are the states that it's a bit harder to go to 4 day on those states because they look at days instead of hours. The ones that look at hours is, you know, we don't care what your schedule is. Just make sure your kids, you know, have this many hours of instruction for the year.
I would think that there would be some opposition to this plan from parents who have to scramble around to find care for their kid on that empty day.
Yes, and that's always the big issue, daycare on that day. And what I have found is a lot of these districts that go to 4 day, they typically have something in place, whether they open up some of the schools on that Friday and they offer like a discounted daycare, and some of them actually offer free daycare, or there's nonprofits that have like relatively cheap daycare, and the school district might provide the meals to those nonprofits. And in some cases, the school district actually might open up on that Friday just to serve meals, because there are some very poor communities where that might be the only meal the child might be getting, you know, during that school day period. So daycare has been a really big issue. But, you know, and I went to Colorado where more than 50% of the districts use 4 day. And in talking to those parents, there were a lot of them I talked to that initially did not want it, but then they just grew to love it. It's, you know, it's, oh, you know, it lets them take kind of a mini vacation if they want to, you know, get away for an extended weekend with the family. And a lot of parents start out not liking it, but they end up liking it.
And Tonnell, I guess the biggest question, the $20,000 question, what kind of an impact does this have on learning? Do we know yet?
You know, and I've looked at study after study, and from what I can see, academics, just based on these studies, academics are not suffering under the 4 day. And there's actually school districts that say that they've noticed higher test scores because the kids just come back well rested and ready to learn, and they're missing fewer days, so they're in school more. That's how they feel. But academics, we haven't really seen studies that show that kids do horrible. It just seems to be like, you know, academics really just don't seem to be suffering right now, according to these studies.
Tonnell Hobbs of the Wall Street Journal. It's 19 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Ross Akay. A reminder, we can connect on social media. Friend us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. Beyond the headlines, this morning's Mike Gavin is here now with a look at some of the other stories he'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, there's no shortage of news about protesters these days, but the one thing we can usually all agree on is pizza. The only stipulation, the pizza better be hot. That was the problem in the UK recently, where one family was so frustrated with the belated delivery and stone-cold temperature of their Domino's order that they staged a lengthy sit-in protest at the fast casual chain, which ultimately ended with police intervention. On October 5th, Faye James and her family were upset when their Domino's meal was delivered to their home over an hour after they had placed the order. Making matters worse, the mom reported that the food was freezing cold, even though the family lives just 8 minutes away from the restaurant. restaurant's location. James says she spoke to the driver and spent 45 minutes on the phone trying to get a replacement or a refund to no avail. So the whole family went down to the location and wouldn't leave until they were able to speak to a manager, which they say never happened. Finally, around 11 p.m., the manager pressed the panic button, and police arrived on the scene, and after a heated argument, police told the manager to refund the family's order.
Boo-hoo.
And all of this could have been solved if they had done that just immediately.
Or if they go pick up the pizza themselves.
Oh, look at you.
Come on.
But
really?
Look.
This is a police matter?
I'm not saying it's a police matter, but they do have a right to be upset somewhat about getting pizza that was that cold.
Stick it in the oven yourself.
No sympathy for cold pizza for Jennifer
Kashanka.
And Jen, if you've lived a lifetime being disappointed by your favorite football team, we both can relate there. There's only one thing to do. Take one more shot at them after your life is over. Lee Merkel of Raleigh, North Carolina, died last week at the age of 83. He grew up in Rochester, New York, which made him a huge Buffalo Bills fan. Most of Merkel's obituary was typical enough, talking about his life and family. It says that he was an avid fisherman and sports enthusiast who had a religious-like devotion to the Syracuse Orange and his beloved Buffalo Bills. There's also information about where his visitation and funeral would take place, followed by this epic burn of a last line. Lee has requested 6 Buffalo Bills players as pallbearers so they can let him down one last time. Merkel's last parting shot follows similar recent requests from Eagles and Browns fans.
So this is a thing now.
This is becoming a bit of a trend. You know, I know you have, you know, years and years before you have to think about this sort of thing, but could there be a mention of your beloved Rutgers team and yours when the time
comes? I will
do
it, and after last night's performance, you can do it for your Giants.
For the Giants as well.
Oh, gosh, we are suffering this year, aren't we not?
Let's get writing.
Yeah, thanks. It's 12 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for 4 straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan as the most improved state for business. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.org.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. A small but growing proportion of the youngest children in the U.S. have not been vaccinated against any disease, worrying health officials. According to a new CDC report, some 100,000 young children have not had a vaccination against any of the 14 diseases for which shots are recommended. Most young children, 70%, have had all their shots. The new estimate is based on a finding that in 2017, 1.3% of the children born in 2015 were completely unvaccinated. That's up from the 0.9% seen in an earlier similar assessment of the kids born in 2011. Young children are especially vulnerable to complications from vaccine-preventable diseases, some of which can be fatal. The latest numbers come from a telephone survey last year of parents. A separate CDC study found that overall vaccination rates for older kindergarten-age children continue to hold steady, with close to 95% fully vaccinated. It's 9 minutes before the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Jen, roads damaged by Florence last month in North Carolina were inundated and washed out again by Michael yesterday. Governor Roy Cooper says toppled trees and power lines have left some 400,000 residents in the dark.
We're also seeing flash flooding in some cities like Charlotte, Raleigh, and Chapel Hill.
Rescue crews making their way into parts of the Florida panhandle found entire rows of homes smashed to tinder, boats thrown onto lawns and lots like toys, and roofs torn and crumpled alongside soaked rubble. Hundreds of people refused or simply had no time to evacuate in the hardest hit areas of Mexico Beach and Panama City along the Florida coastline. President Trump is promising long-term federal assistance in the wake of Hurricane Michael.
We will do everything in our power to help those in need. And we will not rest or waver until the job is done and the recovery is complete.
Trump says he'll visit the disaster zone sometime next week to avoid distracting from recovery operations. He attends a political rally in Ohio tonight and in Kentucky tomorrow. President Trump's not on board with a possible clampdown on the military-to-military relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia over the unexplained disappearance of Saudi Arabian journalist and U.S. resident Jamal Khashoggi on a visit to the Saudi consulate in Turkey last week. Putting the military partnership on hold would include nixing arms sales and withdrawing support for the Saudi-led coalition fighting in Yemen's civil war. Louisiana Republican Senator John Kennedy says caution is warranted.
I trust everyone else in the Middle East about as much as I trust gas station sushi.
Citing Khashoggi's disappearance, billionaire Richard Branson suspending discussions with Saudi Arabia about a proposed $1 billion investment in his Virgin space companies. F-35 fighters have been grounded as part of an ongoing investigation into a jet that crashed in Beaufort, South Carolina last month. Military officials say the U.S. Navy, Air Force, and Marines, as well as 11 international partners, are involved in a fleet-wide inspection of a fuel tube inside the engine of the F-35. USA Today reports Ryan Coogler will return to Wakanda as writer-director of Black Panther 2. His first Marvel superhero movie smashed box office records in February to critical acclaim, awards discussion this fall, and a $1.3 billion worldwide ticket sale total.
I'm sure people are very excited about that news.
Woo, yes.
Thank you, Ross. It's 5 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. It's hard enough to gather up your pets when you're fleeing a hurricane, but it becomes even more challenging when there are animals in your home you didn't even know about. A Florida family attempting to flee Hurricane Michael was stunned to discover a few furry stowaways living in their attic. WABC reports that as the family decided to abandon their Panama City residence due to a damaged ceiling, several kittens came tumbling out. They say they had no idea the kittens were living in their home. Luckily, a cousin came along and got them to safety. They were moved to a shelter in Fort Walton. A rescue organization, PAWS, has put out some tweets and information about how those kittens can now be adopted. And that'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Jennifer Kishinka. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.